What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Uncensored Podcast. I'm Carter Haas, and today I'm going to be giving you my recap of UFC 317 and what's next for some of the fighters on the card. So the first thing I want to talk about is actually the prelim fights, which people don't really talk about all the time, but this was a great round of prelim fights. All of these fights lived up to the hype. At International Fight Week, it's one of the biggest cards of the year. And I think it's safe to say that UFC 317 is most definitely one of the best cards that we've had overall in recent memory. We really don't get super cards like this all the time, and or cards that just live up to the hype all the time, except this fight from the start to finish lived up to every single part of it. In the prelims, there were three first-round finishes, starting with Terrence McKinney, who had a submission victory in the first minute of the fight. He had a sweet double leg takedown, and then just got him at a nice body triangle, and then submitted him with the choke. Terrence McKinney has a 100% finish rate, so he's definitely going to be a fun guy for the matchmakers to keep putting him in there to fight, because when you get out of fights without taking any damage, it just allows you to get back into the next training camp and into another fight. In the UFC, Dana has said this all the time, you have to be ready to take about, you have to be ready to take advantage of an opportunity that comes your way. So we'll see what they do with him next. But and then the next one was Jose Miguel Delgado. He had a first round knockout 26 seconds into the fight. Which, if you don't know, that's rare that you get a knockout that fast. And what was crazy is Delgado was only like a minus 150 favorite. And he was in my parlay that I had, because I've watched some of his fights before. The guy has like 9 professional wins. He's been a very good fighter. So the fact that he really wasn't like a higher favorite was a good money bet to put down, just because of the value that he had there at such low odds. And so, again, like I just said about McKinney, a fast finish, it allows for the matchmakers to put you back into consideration for another fight soon, so that'll be good for him. And then the third round one finish was Gregory Rodriguez and Jack Hermanson. Gregory Rodriguez with a nasty, nasty knockout. The first round was a really good round. Jack Hermanson was having a very good round. He had more significant strikes. He had some good control time in that first round. But then, Gregory Rodriguez is a heavy hitter. That guy can hit very hard. And then he just got the shot. He really beat up the head of Hermanson. And when you just take that many headshots, you're not going to be able to chin all of them. And so he finally got caught by one. But that was still a fantastic fight. And then to start the main card, we had Peyton Talbot and Felipe Lima. So for those who don't know, Peyton Talbot is one of the up-and-coming guys in the UFC. He's a young fighter. He took a loss earlier this year, and a lot of people read him off. A lot of people said he was a bust, that he was already done, that his career wasn't even going to get started. Well, he came back with a very good fight, a unanimous decision win. He outstruck Felipe by like 30 significant strikes, had a lot of good takedown defense, didn't let Felipe take him down. And that's the type of performance you need to get back in the good graces of the matchmakers, because when you really have talent and when you're young, the UFC is going to want to use you, because you got to think back to guys like Max Holloway or a young John Jones. When you're young, that's the chance you get to where you can make a mistake or two but still have a career down the road. Mirab Dvalishvili, who is now the UFC bantamweight champion, he was like 2-3 in the UFC to start his career. He had some hiccups, but then he learned and got over them, and now he's the champion again. So sometimes shit just happens. You take a loss. He got back up and he got a nice unanimous decision win over a 14-2 Brazilian who is he's a good fighter. I've watched some of his fights before. He's a solid fighter. And then the next fight we have was Benil Dariush versus Renato Moicano. You might recognize the name Moicano. He stepped up on short notice in the January card when Islam Makhachev and Arman Tsarukyan were supposed to fight. Arman Tsarukyan had to drop out. So Moicano took his opportunity. He ended up getting submitted by Makhachev in round one, but that was expected. And so but originally in that card, he was supposed to fight Dariush. So then they finally rebooked that fight, and Benil Dariush got the best of him. 56 significant strikes to 31 for Dariush. 5 for 5 on takedown attempts for Dariush. Which, if you don't know, 5 takedowns for a guy who is 36 years old, which is really, that's old in UFC when you get up there past 35. That's big time. And Dariush was coming off 2 knockout losses to Tsarukyan and Charles Oliveira. So he had been kind of shaky, but he gets back, and he is older, but I would really like to see him and Dan Hooker go at it, because at this point of his career, Dariush isn't really going to get a title shot, or he's not going to be in the title shot picture. So therefore, I would like to see him fight a guy like Dan Hooker, who's a younger guy, and it's always good to have like a gatekeeper in the division, but you know is going to be a very, very good fight night in and night out. Like, look at a guy like Kevin Holland. He's never going to be in the title picture, but when you're an exciting fighter that people want to see fight constantly, that's something that's very good for the company and can get you a lot of good things handed to you. So I would like to see Dariush and Dan Hooker fight next, actually. And then, in my opinion, the fight of the night by far was Joshua Van and Brandon Royval. So for those who don't know, there was UFC 316 that took place in Newark, New Jersey in the first week of June. So like 3 weeks ago. Joshua Van fought 3 weeks ago on that card and against a guy named Bruno Silva. And it was an absolute war of a fight. He took 76 significant strikes. He threw 125 significant strikes. So it was a war. It was a 3-round war that he won by knockout late in the 3rd round. So, but you would expect him to, you know, rest up, maybe wait for another fight to happen. No. Cape dropped out against Royval. So then Joshua Van took advantage of the opportunity, like I was saying. He took advantage of his opportunity to go fight the number one contender in the division. Which is, because here's the thing, no one's going to feel bad for him had he lost. That's not how the UFC works. They don't feel bad for you. They would have respected him for doing it, but at the end of the day, it wouldn't have mattered. So on 3 weeks after fighting in his last fight, Joshua Van goes out there, throws 311 total strikes. He lands 204 significant strikes against the number one contender and wins in a unanimous decision, 229-28 and 130-27. And he has now booked himself the next title shot against Alexandre Pantoja. They had a face-off in the octagon. I'll talk about that fight later and what it could mean. But shout out to Joshua Van. That's just something you don't see a lot of the time. He had a lot of risk taking this fight against the number one contender, against a very good Brandon Royval, who's been in championship contention before. He's fought the top guys. Like, this is a guy you don't want to just go in all willy-nilly against. He knows what he's doing. So the fact that he was able to come in and beat him on short notice like that is really just something special. And then the first of our 2 title fights last night was Pantoja versus Kai Kara France. Pantoja was a minus 280 betting favorite coming into this. He is probably the second greatest flyweight of all time. He had been just running through the division, running through all the challengers, trying to get the belt. No one's been able to do it. And still, he retains his title with a third round rear naked choke of Kai Kara France. And really where Pantoja was able to get him is in each and every round, he was able to take Kai Kara France down, who did not want to fight on the ground. Kai Kara France is a striker. He does not want to be on the ground. So when Pantoja would get him in these nasty body triangles, he wouldn't let him move. It was basically wraps from there because Kai Kara France had to take so much energy to try and get out of those. And with a guy like Pantoja, whose nickname is the Cannibal, he just kept going and going and going. He ended up having 3 takedowns, but 7 minutes and 20 seconds of control time. So you can really see how effective he was with the control time. And then Kai Kara France, he was a dog. He landed 38 significant strikes. So he was throwing. He was throwing when it was on the feet. But again, you just can't get taken down like that against Pantoja, or else it's not going to work out for you. And so now we actually have our next flyweight title matchup, which will be Pantoja versus Van. They had a face-off in the octagon after. And I think that'll be a very, very interesting fight for these reasons. I think Joshua Van, the volume at which he throws at is just otherworldly. On 3 weeks' notice, he came in and threw 200 significant strikes. That means 200 of his strikes were significant against Brandon Royval. That's not just throwing any punch, that's significant punches. And then Pantoja is obviously the second best flyweight of all time behind Demetrius Johnson. He has a deep bag of how he can beat you. He can take you down. He can strike with you. He can fight however you want to fight. But where I think Van is going to be different than a lot of these other fighters is that Van has some very good takedown defense. So if Van is able to prevent, it's really not about getting taken down by France, by Pantoja, though. It's, are you able to get up? Are you able to not let him do the body triangle? Because once you're in a body triangle, you're basically immobile. You're not going to be able to move. You're basically just stuck there on the ground. But with Van's defense, I think if he's able to limit the takedowns, and when he is taken down, be able to get back up, I think he'll be able to have some success. However, where Van is good is he always goes forward. And he's a boxer. So he has to be aware of the level change, or else that's where Pantoja will get him. But I think that's going to be a really good fight. I think this fight right here, a performance by Pantoja, really just put on for all the flyweight division. Because if you really think, before Sean O'Malley got there to the bantamweight division, no one was really watching the bantamweights and the flyweights. Because they didn't care for those other weight classes that are lighter guys. Well, then once Sean got to bantamweight, he put that division on the map. And now you have Merab, who's a very fun fighter to watch. He's flipped the narrative about himself. So now people want to watch the bantamweights fight. And now I think this was Pantoja's biggest card by far. So I think the views that he's going to get now that people see how fun of a fighter he actually is, it's going to be really fun to see what the UFC does with that next. And then now, the fight we've all been waiting for. Ilia Topuria versus Charles Oliveira. If you don't know who these guys are, Ilia Topuria is a new, young, 28-year-old from Georgia and Spain who had knocked out Alexander Volkanovski and Max Holloway in the featherweight division. So, he was the champion of featherweight. He decided, which is a big thing in the UFC, is a lot of these guys, they don't like to cut weight. So he decided, okay, I'm done at 145. I'm going to vacate the title and move up to the 155-pound division. So he vacated the belt, went to 155, and Islam Makhachev, once the result of JDM versus Bilal Muhammad was finalized, Islam Makhachev moved to 170. So now there was, he had to vacate the lightweight title. So now it was a vacant lightweight title up for grabs, and the person he was fighting is a guy who has the most finishes in UFC history, over $1 million in bonuses, Charles Dubronx Oliveira. He's a fan favorite. Everyone loves this guy. He's one of the most fun fighters in the UFC to watch. When this guy fights, your eyes are on the TV because he has so many ways to beat you. He can knock you out. He can submit you. Like, the guy is a walking highlight reel. But those who don't know Ilia Topuria, the guy has absurd power. Max Holloway had been in the UFC since he was around 18 years old. Had never been knocked down or knocked out in a UFC fight in his whole career. And he has fought he's fought the top of the top guys in UFC. So that's just a credit to how much of a chin he has. Ilia Topuria knocked him out in round 3. Knocked him out cold with a left hook. That doesn't happen to Max Holloway. So that was the fear, because something that Oliveira does is he's always walking forward. But against Ilia, you can't do that. So, Ilia Topuria versus Oliveira for the lightweight title. They come in, they both made weight. Fight starts. Oliveira gets Topuria against the fence. He then takes him down. However, Oliveira ends up on the bottom and Topuria on the top. So Topuria is able to work a little bit. He gets Oliveira's eye cut. He's bleeding a lot from the eye. For a second there, it looked like Oliveira could get a submission because he had Topuria's leg and maybe put him in a leg lock. Topuria got out of it. And then Topuria told Oliveira to get back up. So then the fight went back to the feet. For some reason in this fight, even having a pretty significant reach advantage, Oliveira showed zero respect for the power that was coming back towards him from Topuria. And I'm watching the fight and I'm thinking, he is going to get knocked out if he doesn't use the reach advantage. Because this guy has power in his hands. Like, he's probably the number one or number two heaviest hitter in the UFC right now. It's probably him or Alex Pereira. It's one of those two as the top knockout guy or most power in their hands. You have to respect what's coming back towards you. You just have to. Well, Charles walks forward. Ilia, nasty right hand. That stuns him. He's already going to the ground. Hits him with the left hand. And that basically just put him out cold. And that was the fight. Ilia Topuria wins in the first round by knockout. And he is the new lightweight champion of the world. And becomes the 10th ever double champion in the UFC. Joining names like John Jones, George St. Pierre, BJ Penn, Conor McGregor, Alex Pereira, Henry Cejudo, and Daniel Cormier. 10 people ever have been a double champ, and Ilia Topuria, at 28 years old, joins those ranks. And so, now we wonder, who's next for Ilia? Well, after last night, if you don't know, Ilia Topuria and Paddy the Batty Pimblett, they've had a beef since 2022. Those guys hate each other. They do not like each other at all. Topuria brings him into the ring. They start talking to each other. Topuria shoves Patty after their conversation. And so, for me personally, this is what I would do with Topuria. I think that the Patty fight would sell. Because in the UFC right now, you don't really have many real rivalries like you did back then with Daniel Cormier and Jon Jones, Conor and Khabib. Like, you don't really have rivalries right now. That right there is a rivalry. That is a nasty rivalry. Those guys do not like each other. I think that fight, and because both guys are international fighters, you know that they're going to garner so much attention from their respective home countries. So, that's definitely something the UFC is going to look at, is how big Topuria versus Pimlet could be. Because you know the UFC loves to put on those banger fights that the fans want to see. This is a fan favorite matchup right here. However, if you look at it from a logistics standpoint, the fight to make is Ilya Topuria and Armand Sarukian. Armand is the true number one contender in that division. As much as I would love to see Topuria and Patty fight, I could tell you I'm pretty sure Ilya would sleep Patty in the first round. I just think that's what would happen. Like, Charles is on another level than Patty. If Ilya just slept Charles like that, I think Ilya would sleep Patty. What I would do is this. I think you keep the star power that is Patty Pimlet, right? I would put Patty and Justin Gaethje as the title eliminator fight. No, that's the number one contender fight. The winner of that fight gets the next title shot. Because Gaethje, he got knocked out by Max Holloway, and then he won against Rafael Fiziev. But Fiziev is not really, like, he's like number 11 in the division. I think those two should fight each other, and then that, because Justin Gaethje, if you don't know, he's been clamoring for a title fight too. But I don't really think him or Patty right now would logistically deserve to have a title fight. And I think if you're looking for the best overall quality of fight, I would make Topuria versus Armand Sarukian. That's the fight to make. Because I think Armand could actually give Topuria a run for his money. Personally, that's what I think. Because you look at Armand, 22-3. He's got wins by knockout, but he's also a very good wrestler. He's a very good wrestler. Like, just against Charles Oliveira when they fought, this was his last fight, was UFC 300. Hold on, sorry. Armand Sarukian against Charles Oliveira had... We saw Charles lost by split decision. So if you're wondering why Charles got the title fight, it was because Armand Sarukian pulled out on the last day against Islam Makhachev. He was up for the title against Islam Makhachev, but then he pulled out. So, let's look at this. Armand against Charles. 49 significant strikes. He had 2 takedowns against Charles in 8 minutes and 41 seconds of control time. I think if he were to be able to take Topuria down... Topuria has said he is a very high-level wrestler. But here's the thing. That really hasn't been seen because no one's been able to take the guy down. Because you have to respect his punching power. So, my thing is, from a numbers standpoint, Topuria and Patty would blow it out of the water. Those two would absolutely, that might be a top-selling pay-per-view all time. Because Topuria is a Conor McGregor level of star right now. And so, you have to use his talent. And because he's getting these guys out without taking much damage, there's a good chance Topuria fights at the end of the year this year. Which would be insane. And whoever he fights against, it's going to be a big fight. But either one of those fights is going to excite me. But I think that I think it should be Sarukian. I think Sarukian deserves it. But if it went to Patty, that would also, that would be happy for me too, because I think Patty is a good showsman. He would sell the fight doesn't even need to be sold. The fight's already sold. These guys are like, they don't like each other. They are rivals. It's one of the only rivalries we have left in the UFC. So, that's what I think needs to happen next. And so while we're at it, we're going to take a look at some of these next cards that are coming up. So, in July, we have Max Holloway against Dustin Poirier. And so, this fight, if, for those who don't know, this is Dustin Poirier's last fight of his UFC career. After this, he's retiring. He's calling it quits. He's done after this fight. Dustin Poirier has been an interim UFC lightweight champion. He's beaten guys like Conor McGregor. He's beaten Benoit St. Denis. He beat Michael Chandler. He beat Justin Gaethje. But he lost in the title fight to Islam Makhachev last year. So, and for those who don't know, the history that Max and Dustin have, they fought for that interim UFC lightweight championship. They fought each other for it. It was one of Max's first fights of his career was Dustin Poirier. And now, the send-off fight is Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway. And this is big for Max Holloway. For Max Holloway, he's still a top-ranked lightweight right now. If he goes and he beats Dustin Poirier, he's probably another win away from a title shot against Ilia Topuria, who knocked him out. However, you can never overlook Dustin Poirier. Because the thing with Dustin is, he is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Meaning, he is very good on the ground. He can take you down. Or, he can stand and trade with you. That's why I think this is a very tough fight. Because it's really just going to be determined off of the style of fight that we get. Will it be on the feet? Or will Dustin try and take it to the ground? Because Max, we've never really seen him on the ground like that. He doesn't really shoot a lot of takedowns. So, it's going to be very interesting to see what Max decides to do. And then, the sad thing is, the rest of that card on 318, it's a pretty weak card after that. I think there's a couple ranked fighters on it, but other than that, it's not like this card where it's a bunch of ranked, good, known fighters. Which is kind of sad, but then again, you understand it. But then, the next big pay-per-view that we get is a fight that we've all wanted for a very long time. It is Dricus du Plessis versus Khamzat Chimaev. And this is a fight that we've been waiting for a very long time, because Khamzat is the boogeyman of the division. He viciously broke Robert Whittaker's jaw. And Robert Whittaker is one of the best UFC middleweights that there's ever been. If it wasn't for Israel Adesanya, Robert Whittaker would have been a champion. That's how good Robert Whittaker is. And Khamzat got through him in round one, broke his jaw, and then submitted him. But then you have Dricus du Plessis, who's been on a very good run recently. He's beaten Sean Strickland for the belt. He defended it against Adesanya, and then he beat Sean Strickland again in February. I think a lot of people are disrespecting Dricus. Obviously, Khamzat is very good. He's got that nasty wrestling. He can punch with anyone. However, we've never seen Khamzat really go a full five round, except when he did it with Kamaru Usman. And as that fight went into the late second and into the third round, Kamaru Usman really started to gas him out. So it makes you wonder, what is Khamzat's cardio like? Because had that been a five-round fight against Usman, who knows, maybe Usman wins that fight. Because he was trying to put it on Khamzat in that final third round. But there's a lot of good UFC fights upcoming. There's some good fight nights. It's a really good time to be a UFC fan. And with Jon Jones retiring, I think Ilya Topuria has really stepped up as our next superstar. Because there's only one other man in the history of the sport who is able to talk the way he talks and then actually go and do it. And that was Prime Connor when he was calling for first round knockouts and then delivering. But the thing is, Topuria is not like Connor. He's not going to go and get into all that trouble. Or I don't think he'll let the money change him. Because Topuria grew up pretty wealthy. He had to move a couple times, but he grew up pretty wealthy. He wasn't like a lot of these other fighters where they grew up poor and had nothing and they trained from nothing and then they came up. So I don't really think the money is what's going to change Topuria. Because he says he wants to retire early, but I don't know. I think as long as he keeps winning and doing it in the way he does, we could see him have a run that spans years. Because right now he's also kind of the villain. Because all these guys that he's knocking out right now are fan favorites. Volkanovski, fan favorite. Max Holloway, fan favorite. And then Charles Oliveira, another fan favorite. Everything Ilya touches just turns to gold. Like, this is why I want Islam and Ilya to fight. Because I think the one man that could stop Ilya is Islam Makhachev. Because here's the thing. I think Islam, you can call me crazy here, Islam is a more complete fighter than what Khabib was. I think Khabib was a more dominant wrestler. He got you where he wanted and he kept you there and just ground and pounded the whole time. He would destroy you. He would take the will out of you to fight. Islam has that same wrestling ability. When he gets you down, he's a submission artist. He has submitted multiple guys with a darts choke, a guillotine. Like, he knows how to get to submissions. And he is a fantastic wrestler. However, Islam is also a good striker. He's one of the best strikers in the UFC as well. He's one of the most complete bags of a UFC fighter that we have right now that we've seen. So, depending on what happens in the future, if he beats JDM and Ilya continues to defend, because Ilya's already said this, he'll go up to 170 if he can fight Islam. He wants to fight the best. I don't think Islam was running from Topuria when he left. Because here's the thing. Makhachev has always said he's wanted double belt. He's wanted to join that two-time champion club. Well, when Bilal was the champion at 170, he couldn't fight him because they were training partners. They weren't going to fight each other. Now that Bilal is out of the picture, it was Islam's time to go. He had ran through the lightweight division. Yeah, you can say he beat Volk. Well, it's not his fault that Charles pulled out. It's not his fault that Armand pulled out. He can't control what's happening. But Islam has been there every time. He's taken the short notice fights. He's done everything the company has asked of him to do. You cannot blame Islam for doing this. And now that Islam had the opportunity to go up to 170, he did it. And now I think we're gonna see them fight in November or December. I'm thinking MSG in November, and that fight is gonna do some serious numbers. And who knows? Because Volk still wants to fight this year, so maybe we could see a super fight card where it's, you got Volk versus Yair Rodriguez, and then Makhachev versus JDM. But again, don't underestimate JDM. That guy can box with the best of them, and he really took it to Bilal Muhammad. This has been my UFC 317 recap, along with previewing the future cards. Thank you for listening.